in a world.
Hey, bag your dirty. Welcome back to the Wild Business Growth Podcast. This is your place to hear from a new entrepreneur every single Wednesday morning who's turning wild ideas into wild growth. Ideas. I'm your host, Max Brandstetter, founder and ideas man and podcast producer at Max Podcasting. And you can email me at max@maxpodcasting.com to save time with your high-quality podcast. This is episode 177, and today's guest is David Breyer. David is Google's number one rebranding expert. He has been called Brilliant with Branding by Damon John of Shark Tank and FUBU. He's the author of the bestseller Brand Intervention, and he blogs for Fast Company and has been featured in Forbes, Inc., Adweek, and many other top outlets. In this episode, we talk David's branding tips, rebranding tips, rebrandstettering tips, and everything from staying positive, staying optimistic, to that sexy voice in the Duluth trading ads. It is the gravity defier, David Breyer. Enjoy the show. Alrighty, we are here with David Breyer, Google's number one rebranding expert, which I think was your birth name, given name maybe, but
yes, it was. My mother had already given middle names to my two other brothers, and she kind of, so she was going for one. She always had a lot of foresight. So she knew that in about 40 some years that this company called Google would exist. And so she just had that degree. Unfortunately, she didn't plan on investing in them early. That would have been a really smart move.
Yeah. Yeah, so close but no cigar. But Mr. Number One Rebranding, it's very nice to speak with you. But something out of the gate in this whole guest booking process that stood out to me, you know, when you use a site like Calendly or use a calendar service like that, and you have an option for the guests to leave notes if they want, for anything to help prepare for this meeting, you were very clear that there's nothing in the world that can prepare me for having you on. So I have trained by doing an Ironman, 3 marathons. I've been tackled 100 times in a row by Aaron Donald just for effect. And still, I feel like I might not be prepared for this. So that I'm ready to go.
You underestimated what's going to occur in this actually the next 35, 40 minutes. Yeah.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, I'm very sore, but we'll move along here. I'm not just stroking your ego, but you have a very strong and assertive voice in nature. And I think it really resonates with people. How did you develop that in the first place?
Well, I was born at a very young age. And even out of the womb, doctor pulled me out. And he like raised his hand, ready to give me a slap on the butt. And I looked at him. You know, I didn't have facial hair at the time. So, I just looked at him and I said, "Dude, think twice before you actually do what you're thinking about doing." and it was from that point in time that that people seemed to listen. When I gave them a little warning, I gave them a little bit of that New York bravado eye, that stare. I call it the New York stare. And for people that don't know what that is, they're probably thinking, "Why is he talking about this? Steps and stairwells?" I'm not. I'm talking about the look right in your eye that tells you, "I own you." So that's basically when it started.
And there are some wonderful staircases in New York as well. So let's not, leave those out of the daylight. But you were born named after Google. You were talking back to the doctor from day one. Clearly, you are one of a kind. But somewhere along this space, you found a home in this, or made a home in this branding space. And I know the term brand is so popular these days, and you probably get sick of all the other probably tens or hundreds of thousands of quote-unquote branding experts out there. What pulled you into the branding space?
Well, I was an artist. I've been an artist my whole life. And so I was basically studying to be an illustrator when I went to college, and it was actually in my last semester when I was getting my associate in arts degree that I saw a publication that blew my mind. I actually had never seen a publication like that before, because it had a level of craft and art and deliberateness. So many publications, and publications are, you know, not as prevalent as they were because so much stuff is online these days. But back then it was like, it was an industry publication, oversized, and was amazing. And I was shocked because you could feel it. It just, the designs and the work leapt off the page using language and typography, you know, the use of letter forms and shape and just contrast and illustration and photography, that I was blown away. And it was literally that I made the decision. I'm going to take more of this. I'm going to widen my footprint to do something that would really make sure that the outcome of all the pieces really sang brilliantly together. Because up till that point, I was looking at being an illustrator. Well, if you're an illustrator, that means you're going to be working with art directors and others who they'll be hiring you. And what would happen is they would go, all right, and they're going to now take it. And now it's out of your hands, right? Are they going to make good choices? Are they going to do it, use it too big? Are they going to use it too small? Are they going to choose lousy border, or lousy colors, this, that, the other? So, you know, so it was really, did I want to just be, I sometimes use this as an analogy. Do I want to be a musician in an orchestra where I'm technically brilliant, you know, and I can perform any piece of sheet music put in front of me, but that doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to be a brilliant song or really even sound great. All I could do is my part well. So I didn't like that. I couldn't control, predict the outcome. So that's when I made my conscious decision.
Very conscious. Although I can hear Beethoven's Ninth coming from your viola as we speak.
Probably a little bit more of like a Miles Davis kind of blue, but it was definitely. Even though I did use the classical musician as the thing. See, I only know Beethoven's Ninth by name. I have no idea what it sounds like. Do you know what it sounds like?
We'll use the next 70 minutes, and I'll do it note for note. I hope you've cleared your calendar for the day. No, I have no idea. I only know it as far as making references like this. This is the extent of my knowledge of it. So we're kind of on the same page there. Beethoven's Ninth is a form of design in a way, and that's incredibly corny, but rolling with it. What is it about this world of design and fonts and typography, like those things that you were alluding to that capture your attention? Is there a specific element within design that really grabbed you and really, really got you excited?
See, when I started my career, there were like different people who were like making an impact in the world. I mean, and people like Andy Warhol, people like Peter Max, different publications, different things. And I was always fascinated how, you ever notice how there's certain styles of design that take you, that they practically transport you somewhere. You know, it might be something that's nostalgic. It might be something vintage. It might be something futuristic. But just by seeing it, you know where you've landed. It's kind of like those voices. Like I always am amused by those, what I call those stupid trailer voices, where they say, in a world, you know, and you hear that crap and you go, oh my God.
You should do that, by the way. You should just say the words, in a world. And that you could get paid for that, I think.
Exactly. Well, the thing is that, you know, it's like where men meet women and women meet men. And when men were made of wood and women were made of steel, you know, and so you hear all that crap and all of a sudden it's now transported you and me to someplace. Well, if that can be done with a voice, it can also be done, like I'm always fascinated with soundtrack music, because you ever notice like they hit just that one note and you know that something horrible is going to occur in the next 30 seconds. How do they know? How does that one note strike that? How do we all know that? it's rather, I always find that fascinating. Or then there, or there's a certain little pitch that we, that the soundtrack seems to go. And all of a sudden, you know, they're about to fall in love and have mad, you know, passionate intercourse on the screen. And so, so you go, it's just fascinating to me. So I always found it interesting that, that little bits and pieces, how we knew that they could move us to a certain thing. Was that a masculine topic that was going to be talking about, or female topic that was going to be talking about, or was it something designed for children? Because I've done stuff for Jim Henson. I've done stuff for Fraggle Rock. I mean, and I've done stuff for the New York Times Magazine. I've designed a cover of the Rolling Stone Magazine. I know all these different spaces, and I can adapt to really elevate that story in that genre. So I just love the visual vocabulary and how it helps people go to where they need to be the right in the right frame of mind.
So let's go madly and passionately into transforming your brand. So you have the bestseller Brand Intervention, as we mentioned, thanks to your parents giving you the name. You kind of were born into the role of being the number one, Google's number one rebranding expert. So there's branding and then there's rebranding. At what point in a brand's lifetime do you typically see a great point to change it up a little bit and rebrand?
The rebranding is done for a particular few reasons. One is, let's say a company, and it could be a large company, it could be a small company, it could be a solopreneur, or it could be $1 billion publicly traded company. I've worked with any of those and more. What happens is, sometimes you'll find that, wait, I'm pigeonholed. You know, my whole spectrum is from 1 to 100. And all the people know is the work that I do, ranging from 11 to 14, right? They don't know anything. They don't know anything from 1 to 10, you know, and they don't know anything from 15 on up. And so I've been pigeonholed. So that's a time when you need to really consider rebranding, because you are now synonymous with something that's a fraction of what you could be. That's one scenario. Another scenario is your entire market segment is exploding at a faster rate than you are. There's something wrong with what you're presenting to the world. Another is, especially for companies that have been in existence 20 or more years, they oftentimes, and I see this happen a lot, a company, you know, their first couple of years out of the gate, they were known for XYZ. And then they started actually doing, you know, as any company would, they started growing, expanding their product offering or service offering, but yet they're only still known for that what they did in the first 2 years. And at this point, what that was now represents only 20% of their business, not 100% of their business. So 80% of their business is not even represented or known. So those are examples where a rebrand is really, really necessary. And lastly, it would be, let's say there's a cultural shift or a technological shift, and you have a name or a presence that is synonymous with where things have been but are not reflective of where things are headed. So that might be another circumstance, but those are a few of the common ones.
Yeah, they make perfect sense. And I think any business owner at some point hits the reality of, okay, I've been building this, and then at a certain point it's like, oh wait, people don't even know I do this, or people don't even know this is where we're spending our time, things like that. So that pigeonhole dumb is a real thing out there. What are some warning signs that you might be falling into one of those buckets of, uh-oh, we might need a rebrand?
Oh, well, the most painful ones are when you actually go and visit someone and you just randomly, just casually mention blah, 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 and that's your bread and butter. And that's what you are known by new clients. But this is a client who's been with you for a while. And they're like, really? You guys do that? That's brutal. That's like, and especially, and they say, damn, you know, we just gave a $50,000 project. We were just wanted another company. Had we known you would have done it, we would have given it to you. That's painful. You know, and if you just kind of seeing an attrition that where you're actually losing clientele or customers to others, they're going with the next newest, shiniest company. Maybe they have a charismatic CEO and that CEO is just like just crushing it and persuasive, et cetera. And you're finding that your brand loyalty that people have had to your company doesn't exist. You know, that's or it's evaporating more rapidly than, you know, than the tears on a Hollywood actor or actress when they've actually been caught, you know, being unfaithful to their spouse.
we got back into mad passionate intercourse yet again, but yeah, I think it's to your earlier point, it's incredibly scary as a business owner to think, oh my God, what we've lost our loyalty. Our customers just aren't willing to stay committed to us. Okay, so you've identified the warning signs. You know you need to make some sort of change here. What are the first couple steps of getting the ball rolling on a brand intervention / rebrand?
Well, the first thing is one has to really look at what space is one in. And when I say that, it's like, well, are you a jeweler? Are you a technology company? And if you're a technology company, what segment of the technology are you in? Are you a subscriber model where you're offering XYZ? Are you an entertainment company? Are you a food company? Blah, 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 blah. And within that, really dialing in, well, what's our thing? Like if someone, like, for example, let's say someone were like, hey, we just do the most amazing pastries. Well, I wouldn't then say that we're a food company. We're a pastry company, and actually we're in the dessert space, but we're actually offering, you know, the warmest, most delicious, most succulent, most you know, basically the kind of pastries that make me feel violated and compromised at first bite.
Oh, that kind.
Yep, that kind. And so that's the kind of thing that would be like, so you got to dial in, all right, what are we offering and who's going to really want that? You know, I mean, is it going to be people who are going to do this as an indulgence, this, that, the other, what's their lifestyle? What's the this, what's that? You really just want to understand who you're best serving. And by doing that, you can then isolate, are there needs being satisfied and satiated by other brands? And so that we can really be honest about, well, then what are we doing and what are we doing and why are we doing it and how is it different and more advantageous than the what they're already getting, right? All right, they're already getting their fix from XYZ company and ABC company over there and DEF and, you know, GHI. Okay, good. We got all those guys. So that's our competition. So you got to look at the world out there. And that's in direct contradiction to what most companies do. Most companies are going to sit down and say, well, let's work out our mission statement. Let's work out what we think and our values. And let's just be so like freaking selfish and so cosmically unaware that we know that if we build it, they will come. Another piece of bullshit from Hollywood. So that's the kind of thing where we've really got to balance the inner worlds and the outer worlds and look at around, because there's way too many options out there today. There's a gazillion whatever's you want to pick, you know, LinkedIn experts or, you know, or social media people or restaurants or blahs or blah or online markets. Da, da, da. So that's the thing. You got to really be aware. And then by doing that, now you can start to dial in and say, good, why should anybody care about what we're offering? I cannot tell you how many entrepreneurs look at me with their eyes glaze over like something that just came out of the Krispy Kreme conveyor belt.
I'm hardcore craving that now. Thanks.
Look, I'm here for you. And so the thing is that's what these guys do. I say, tell me why I should care. And they always, you know, why I as a consumer, why should I should give a damn about what you're offering? And they're always like, well, we do blah, 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 we do blah. And they're always satisfied with that answer. And I then tell them, thank you for that answer. And here's my question for you though. Why do I know if I went to one of your competitors right now, they essentially would give me the same answer that you just gave me? And that's when all of a sudden the lights turn on, kind of like the way they turned the lights on Sharon Stone when she was being interrogated in that and by Michael Douglas and the other guys. But the bottom line is there's all of a sudden they're breaking into a sweat and they're going, oh, damn it, I have a problem. And it's like, you're right, you do. So unless you realize that you got a problem, you're going to kind of think that branding or rebranding is as a cosmetic facelift. And that could not be further from the truth.
How do you find the best brand differentiator. I just invented a word. How do you find the best brand differentiator for you?
Well, basically the way that that's done is what we do it is we look at the competition that's out there, and really the honest competition, not the bullshit competition.
Bullshit competition sounds like it would be something that would be fun to watch, or maybe that's the next Squid Games.
Well, it probably would be the next Squid Game. It's probably going to be a sequel. The thing that happens is you can't just say, hey, yeah, we're a startup. We're a technology startup, and our competition is Apple. I'm like, dude, get the hell over yourself, right? That's what I mean by bullshit competition. So like, okay, there are these companies, da, 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 because those are the ones that companies your size are that people are going to be choosing between you and them. So that's what I mean. So you got to be honest about the competition, but you got to find out, what are all those guys saying? What are the commonalities that all of those companies are actually saying to one another, or about themselves to the industry? And then looking at those commonalities, you need to find out where and how are you different, because different is better than better. So you've got to be smart, and you can't be doing lazy observation. You've got to really lean into it and go, okay, so how are we actually different? And not just like, well, we're younger. That, who gives a shit? Well, we're made in the USA. You and everyone else. Who gives a shit? We're forward thinking. You and everyone else. Thank you. That's bullshit. We're younger and hungrier. Thank you very much. It's like all that is bullshit. Those are meaningless. So you got to really find out. And you know, having done this for 41 years, it's always there, but oftentimes entrepreneurs are too close to it. They lack what I call the passionate impartiality. They really give a shit, but they're also at the same time want to say, you know what? That's not the prettiest baby I've ever seen. In fact, it's downright ugly. So here's the thing. Now you got to have that passionate impartiality.
You, I think, just coined something that could be in like a Seinfeld episode or something. Maybe we call it the ugly baby. I don't know. They're just spitballing here. But you mentioned a lot about looking out in the market, look at the competitors in your segment. And another thing that's external facing is your logo and the kind of creative elements of your brand that are obviously such a big part of it. How important is reviving/revitalizing the lockups and brand logo and everything when you do a rebrand?
Well, it's important to the extent that we have to be honest when we ask this question. If we were starting today, let's say you have a company that's been in business for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, whatever. If we were starting today, is this what we would be doing and introducing to the world? Now, at the same time, we're not just being haphazard and ignoring if there's any equity that's been built up. Like, for example, like Toys R Us. Why Toys R Us is no longer in existence is an act of stupid. It's a testament to the how stupid people can be. The name equity of Toys R Us is off the charts. Everyone knows Toys R Us, right? The only people that don't know are basically zombies who haven't been awakened yet. Those are the ones that are not aware of Toys R Us as an entity. So why isn't that Toys R Us reinvented itself? You know, I don't think the freaking giraffe, was it Jeffrey did the giraffe? Was that the Toys R Us?
Yeah, I think he went by the freaking giraffe though.
Yeah. All right. So we have the Toys R Us giraffe, which was that's hokey. That's dated. But Toys R Us as a name, brilliant. Okay. Because it's a brilliant name, but it's just, man, it's like everyone knows it. Good. Well, they could have reinvented themselves. They could have had a total facelift, an overhaul, made themselves fresh, relevant, changed their business model from being, okay, we have shit on shelves. That's right. Shit on shelves, SOS. So the thing is that we have shit on shelves. Instead of that, how come they didn't make them like have little hubs where there were places where kids could play and enjoy? The parents could bring their kids there. The kids could check it out, enjoy it, see what it's like experientially. And if they took photographs and posted it to social media and tagged Toys R Us, they would actually get a credit on their purchase. And all of a sudden they have a brand new model. It's now it's a place of experience and discovery and toys where you can also take home what you have fallen in love with. And just that alone, why couldn't that have been done? Sheer laziness and complacency and not being proactive enough. So that's just an example for you.
I like your idea for them. I am a little heartbroken, though. I think the kid in me who heard Toys R Us and shit in the same sentence would have just totally freaked out there.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, but the thing is that just tells me, that are you not a parent?
No, I'm not.
Because shit and kids go together. I mean, you if you raise kids, diapers and shit happens to find its way into those diapers matched by some form of osmosis or something.
Yeah, I think it's David Blaine, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's and there's a reason why smelly air rhymes with dairy air. I mean, so that's all I can say.
Wow. You are a wizard with rhyming. What's the number one thing that you should not do when considering a rebrand?
Don't just do it because if the CEO has just married a new spouse, you know, a new trophy wife or a trophy husband, because they're doing well. It's like, oh, and he or she is like, you know, I really don't like the logo. You know, I've talked about it with my boyfriends or my girlfriends and none of us like it. Don't show up the next day calling an emergency meeting with all the C-suite folks and saying, okay, we're going to be changing the logo because my spouse doesn't like it. And not only that, I showed it to my puppy and his tail stopped wagging. You see, that would be a problem.
that would be. That would be bad to the bone. Na-na-na-na. If you are feeling badass to the bone, oh God, just forget I ever said that. If you want to add a podcast to your business, to your personal brand, to your personal rebrand, but you know it takes a crazy amount of time to actually do that, to actually get it out into the world every week or every other week or whatever your schedule is, hit me up at max@maxpodcasting.com. I will take loads of that time and effort off your plate. Keep the fun parts to your plate so you can keep having a blast creating this podcast, adding new life to your business, expanding your network in and out of your space. Email me at max@maxpodcasting.com to save time with your high-quality podcast. Now, Mr. Breyer on energy. Let's switch gears a little bit. Let's get to you as a person, inspiration and creativity, how you stay creative, how you stay inspired. And you have tremendous energy. How do you have tremendous energy?
I'm really interested. I'm really curious. I'm really fascinated. And I'm an eternal optimist. And what I mean by that is as much as I'm a realist and I look at where things are and where they need to land and where they can land and where they can't land, at the same time, I'm an eternal optimist in that because I work with so many entrepreneurs and CEOs, I'm always dealing with people and I refuse to let them ever close me on the fact that something can't be done or that, oh, that's beyond our scope. I'm like, bullshit. It's beyond your scope because you decided it was beyond your scope. And I'm like, bullshit. If you're gonna do that, then just be honest with me and tell me we're not going to do it because we decided we're not going to do it. In which case, I'll respect your decision. But if you're going to say, well, that's beyond your scope, bullshit. I will challenge that every day and every night because people are operating in a fraction of their capability. Entrepreneurs are operating in a fraction of their capability. No matter how much they're doing, they could be doing more. And it doesn't mean that they have to, I'm not advocating, okay, work 18 hours a day, have no life, never eat, never. No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is people's amount of hustle of what it takes to make the dent that they can and should make in the world is very, very, very commonly underestimated. And so, and then they wonder, why am I not doing blah, 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 blah. I mean, after all, you know, I am dropping one post a week. Or something stupid like that. It's like, yeah. It's like, I do that. I do posts like every day on all these channels and all this stuff. And I make sure that my presence is there because if I freaking stop breathing life into it, then people, you know, it's like, what are we going to validate in life? What are we going to lean into? What are we going to put energy into? Because what we put energy into is what's going to reciprocate. So that's the kind of stuff that I look at. And that's what gives me energy. I love seeing people's lives explode brilliantly, and I'm damn good at it. And so I I'm not giving up on my ability, my exercising my ability to help them. So if we're having that conversation, they better be on their game and bringing it all to me as well. So I'm as demanding on them as I am on myself.
I, like you, am a very optimistic person, probably to a ridiculous degree. But there's, you know, a lot of glass half full, a lot of glass half empty, a lot of glass half whatever people out there in the world. What would you say to someone who is striving to be more positive and more of an optimist, but recent incidents with their business, or maybe they've lost some clients, or they've had a string like that, just keeps bringing them down?
Pessimism isn't all it's cracked up to be. That's the first thing that I would tell them. But besides that, I would tell them that when people are facing challenges, and this is more serious to the point, when people are facing challenges, you know, and I told someone yesterday who said, "Hey, David, I've really lost my mojo, you know, and I'm thinking of this, I'm thinking of that, and da 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 da." And they're looking, should I take this little course? Should I do this little webinar? Da da. I said, "Bullshit. You need to take on double what you're taking on." And because I find people who have the time, and this is not me being unempathetic, it's actually me being more empathetic. When I find people circumstances are able to bring them down, what I end up seeing happen is that they're not taking on enough. They need to take on more. They need to widen their sphere of influence. I can tell you right now, there are people who would look at my schedule and they would probably freaking have a heart attack. They would not even think it was possible.
I think I just had one while recording.
Well, the thing is that what happens is that it's like, you know what? All of a sudden, when we demand more of ourselves, I'll give you a perfect scenario. Everyone has experienced this. Have you ever noticed that when you have a chore to do, if you've got an hour to do the chore, it's going to somehow take you an hour to do the chore. But if all of a sudden you say, you know what, you got 18 minutes to get it done, all of a sudden, somehow, you get it freaking done in 18 minutes.
It's like packing last minute for a trip.
Exactly. So the thing is like, it's kind of similar. It's like, wait a second. So you think that you've done X, Y, Z, and that's given you problems. And so usually people's knee-jerk reaction, oh, that's giving me problems. I'm gonna pull back. I'm going to regroup. I'm going to rethink about it. I'm going to meditate. Maybe I'll do less. Maybe I overreached. Bullshit. You didn't reach enough. If you've gotten your teeth kicked in and you were working with three people, take on seven, take on 10. You will not have your teeth kicked in anymore because you're properly rising to what you're really capable of doing.
So let's get to a fan favorite segment called the Wild Business Shoutout of the Week.
The Wild Business Shoutout of the Week.
Excellent.
Thank you. That shout out, Wayne's World. Wild Business Shoutout of the Week. This is where we talk about a creative marketing, or I'll even call it branding, approach that broke through the clutter. And there's something with, my voice can't go quite that low, but there's something with Duluth and their commercials that just puts a smile on your face, puts you in a good space. What is it that you think Duluth and their commercials are doing right?
Well, first of all, I love the guy when he goes, "Duluth Trading." You know, it's like he has that kind of that grisly, deep, deep voice. It's like, "Does your underwear squeeze your nuts like a freaking rusty wrench?" You know, I mean,
they should do that.
You know, and so they have that. First of all, the writing of the scripts are great. They're dry. They're short. They're punchy. Their commercials tend to be mostly 15 seconds, which is crazy. You know. So occasionally they'll do a 30 second, but they do like these 15 second commercials, but the animation is hysterical. The expressions on these guys is hysterical. It kind of is a parody of the culture that it's serving, but that culture can laugh at itself. And so I think it's brilliantly done. And I love the fact that they're so contrarian. It's like, so a 15 second commercial instead of a 30 or 45 or a minute, that's one thing. Secondly, they got just that guy. And it's like, Duluth Trading, now for women. You know, whatever it is. Like, they do whatever the hell they do. But it's that guy with his voice. The illustrations are black and white. They might occasionally have a spot of color. So, so they don't go all glitz. You know, they've gone completely the opposite. And then their freaking logo, Phil's like, the logo, Duluth Trading. You know, it's like when you don't know how to spell Duluth, you know, drink some vermouth. Yeah, that's the way it is.
Bravo. Have you ever gone an entire day speaking with that voice? Because that would be fantastic.
No, I think I would have to be drinking water about every 14 minutes. I mean, I think my throat would get scratchy.
All right. Well, we're going to get to the high pitch segment for the rest of it. No, that would hurt as well.
That'd be painful. I don't even know that I can go that high.
Me neither. But you did mention your nuts being very close, squeezed in with Duluth. So that might have contributed to that. Anyway, let's wrap up with some rapid fire Q&A. You ready for it?
Go for it.
All right. Let's get wild. Sponsored by Duluth. No. Damon John, Mr. FUBU, a.k.a. Mr. Shark, the People Shark, wrote the foreword to your book. What was his reaction when you asked him to write the foreword to your book?
He was basically, I had explained it to him, and he was like, I'm in. It was pretty instantaneous. I mean, it was just, it didn't take a lot of back and forth. You know, I had developed a track record. I'm very deliberate in my relationships. I am not. The one thing that I find too many folks do is they try to prematurely force reciprocation, you know, blah, 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 blah. Hey, could you, you know, and it's like, get the hell over it. It's like, stop that. That's like, don't try to basically get to like third base, you know, even before the appetizers come, you know, on the first date. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you might have some premature reciprocation.
Yeah, oh, there'll be some reciprocation. It's probably gonna be a quick swift kick in the nuts. that'll be the reciprocation one will get at that point.
And hopefully you're wearing Duluth.
Exactly. If you were in Duluth, you might survive the experience. That's right. When you're sitting across from that girl, just remember, we're Duluth. It'll keep you well protected when you need it.
And speaking of well protected, you're well protected in the Alexa skill category for branding and rebranding. You got the top skill there. This is kind of, at the time of recording, it still feels like kind of a newer thing, but something that's growing and growing. And obviously, you know, each year more and more people are going to be surrounded by that thing named a something. Now that you've established yourself in that space, what do you wish you knew going in with developing a new Alexa skill?
Really knowing like what's the best setup? Because the thing with a scenario like Alexa, one can really record it almost anywhere, but devices weren't always perfectly set up, you know, whether it was wind or this and that, the other. And so really having the proper technical setup is probably was the biggest challenge, I would say.
This high tech stuff, it's like there's technology involved. It's crazy.
It is.
You mentioned typography. What's your favorite font of all time?
I cannot answer that because I literally have a font collection of over 3,000 fonts on my computer because I am a typaholic, or recovering one, by the way. And why I probably had an answer in 1980, but I certainly today I don't, because I am very chameleon-like in that I don't try and put my look on my clients' brands. I look at creating a brand new visual ecosystem that is unique to them. So I create a lot. But I will say a workhorse. I wouldn't say it's my favorite, but I say a workhorse font that I actually enjoy working with quite a bit because I think it's well designed and well balanced is actually Work Sans. Or as Duluth would say,
that's right. My favorite typography, at least the font I like to work with, is called Work Sans. That's right. Sounds just the way it sounds. And not only that, it looks even better.
Perfect. Making me want to switch my underwear right away. Okay, no, never mind. Last thing. If you were in a traveling circus and they're introducing you as the incredible, what would be your special skill or like hidden talent?
Well, I basically would be introduced as a magician who has the ability to make stupid excuses disappear in the blink of an eye.
Beautiful, deliberate, straight, and to the point. David, thank you so much. Really, really appreciate you coming on, bringing the energy, bringing the mad, passionate intercourse references and underwear talk. Always appreciated. Where's the best place for people to learn more about you and eat up more of your excuse slashing?
Well, I would say for sure they should go to risingabovethenoise.com, R-I-S-I-N-G, or as the Duluth dude would say, risingabovethenoise.com. That's right. Be there as long as you're not square. But the thing is so risingabovethenoise.com is a definitely place for them to go to check out all the tons of stuff that will help and educate them. And for sure, you'll always find me hanging around the LinkedIn bar. You know, I'm the dude that basically has, I have the slice and dice, you know, device right by beside my drink, you know, so that way if you show up with something incredibly stupid, it will be sliced and diced right there in real time with more dexterity than a freaking Benihana, you know, performing your little, you know, chef that is just preparing your meal right in front of you.
And here we are, and you have gone a full day now in the Duluth voice, so bravo. But David, thanks again. Last thing, final thoughts could be a quote, a line, whatever you want. It could be a few words if you want. Just send us home here.
Well, I would say that if you're looking at making a dent in the world, then show up with something that, first of all, be wearing really good Duluth underwear. That's very important. And just know that, you know what? No one can stand in your way of actually making a lasting impression and leaving a legacy. As far as I'm concerned, I consider we're all here to actually leave a legacy. And whether that's in some big way or some lesser big way, but the bottom line is don't minimize what you're doing under any circumstance. Because if you do, I will personally ship you underwear that is so damn small, you'll be shocked if you can even get one sack in there. But that's how much I'm going to remind you that you chose the wrong size to try and fit in. So stay big, be bold, and be a badass.
Wait, how many sacks does the average person
have? Oh, well, you know, there's usually, you know, it's kind of like a loaf of bread. It's kind of like two halves, you know? And so...
Exactly. Thank you so much, David B., for joining the podcast, sharing your amazing stories, your wonderfully beautiful voice, and branding tips and rebranding tips. And thank you, wild listeners, for tuning in to another episode. If you want to hear more wild stories like this one, make sure to follow the Wild Business Growth Podcast on your favorite app and tell a friend about the podcast. You can also find us on Good Pods, where you can check out awesome Good Pods. And for any help with podcast production, you can learn more at maxpodcasting.com. Until next time, let your business run wild.
Bring on the bongos!